for tuning in to The Queer Truth, the podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Hey.
Okay. So I want to jump right in today because I'm going in on the men's.
Abtauchen. Let's do it.
Starting with my least favorite of them all, Lee Daniels.
Oh, the champion of Black women everywhere.
Isn't he, though? So typical of him. Lee Daniels, an out gay man, never here for Black women, ever. Lee Daniels was sat on The Real this week. The Real, for those of you who might not know, is a syndicated program where a whole bunch of women sit around and interview people. And he was talking, Lee Daniels, the creator of Empire, which has been fairly successful, has successfully created a new show that was picked up, and it's called Star. The lead character of Star is white. And Lee Daniels was asked about this on The Real, and he said, quote, "I thought that it was important to address race relations in America. We are truly, I believe, in a civil war. And I think that when we understand that we're all one, that we will then understand America. And America is still to be understood by us."
Right.
End quote. And another quote he goes on to say,
right,
"I think that this white girl is so fabulous that Black people will embrace her and white people will embrace her." End quote. Now, he said this because he said the nation needs healing. And the way we're going to get to healing is with this white lead character. He also said in this interview, I just got to say this because this is really important. He also said in this very same interview that he has never embraced racism. Because if he embraces racism, then racism is real. And if racism is real, then he becomes an angry Black man. Break that down for us. I know you're ready.
That's like when you take philosophy and you get an F because you like, okay, premise A, boom, you got it. Premise B, ooh, you got it. Conclusion W, no, that's not, it doesn't lead to that. We gonna need some if and then training. And that is what is the situation with Lee. He's never, okay, so I think what's a bit unfair is that Lee just is not a good talk. Like, he doesn't know how to formulate his thoughts. He's kind of woo-woo. He's very Hollywood. He lives in his own world. Let me bring this. Let's just be real. Like, Lee is Lee. Lee is not Van Jones. He's not articulate. Like, he's Lee, okay? So he was talking about, like, the Civil War and everything else. Like, yes, Lee, we are. And then he moved into, and this white girl, and then he was talking about, I think she's fabulous. But the thing is about Lee, he's super tone deaf on race, because a huge part of his strategy has been to give comfort to white folks. I mean, this is the dude that made Precious, right? Right? You know, so in the context of the inner city, in the ghetto, the savior is, the villains are those in her immediate vicinity, her mama, her daddy, and so on. Those are the villains.
He didn't write the book. He
frames it, though. We know what directors do, though, right? He framed that film, okay? So I think this is who we're dealing with, right? We're dealing with someone who has never really been friendly to Black women in his work. I think that's who he is.
But everybody loves Cookie.
That's the thing. Cookie, in large part, if you just look at the words on the page, and I don't even know what his direction is doing, but I'm real clear. What's her name? Why am I blanking on
the bad
Taraji? How could I ever blank on that? I will punish myself later. But Taraji is Cookie, right? Like, so Taraji makes that character. She bleeds life into that character, her inflection, her everything. I don't think that could be directed, right? Yeah. And even from the get-go, her casting Terrence Howard, the way that she's had autonomy in that role and that character because of her personal relationships and because of who she is, I think that's a different situation. Cookie is Taraji P. Henson in the sense that it's an invention of her. That being the case, Lee, when he does work and actors listen to what he say, is not a friend of Black women. And he doesn't get it, and he'll never get it. And it's this way in which it's really sad because in the gay community specifically, it's like racism squared, right? It's not just racism as it is in the general community. And Leah's gay, just so we say. It's like racism squared. And so for him to like have willful blinders on about racism in a gay community where you can't even read personal ads that don't have like blatant racism in it, it's like, yo, Lee, what world do you live in, man? Where are you living? I think he's just like in a Hollywood bubble doing his thing.
He's new to Hollywood. I don't know if he's in a Hollywood bubble. I think this is just how he has made it possible, as he said, to succeed. And it's not because he hasn't embraced racism. It's because he hasn't accepted the fact that it is very real and it affects even him. So I'm also not surprised that he's a man and that he's a gay man. Honestly, it's nothing new. Moving on to another Black man who...
We're going to talk about the holy trinity of bullshit. We doing this?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
Moving on to the next Black man who failed Black women this week. And I got to explain quite a few things, so give me a moment. Sure. Charlemagne the God, who I've talked about on the show several times just in the last few months. Charlemagne the God messed up badly this week because he tweeted, quote, "Would be dope if a young Black or Hispanic woke woman used social media to create a platform to be a voice like Tommy Lauren did," end quote. He wrote that on December 7, 2016. Now, let's give some backstory and explain the problem. Charlemagne the God is one of the radio hosts on The Breakfast Club, 105. He also has his own MTV show. Let's start there. He came for Tommy Lauren when she gave like this very racist rant against Beyonce's Super Bowl performance, where she said the Black Panther Party was basically just like the KKK. He came for her and he did a fairly good job because she invited him on the show. And this was back in February already. She invited him on the show and he held his own. I was actually like, oh, this is Charlemagne being pretty sharp. And she invited him on the show because he has this segment where he says Donkey of the Day. And he labeled her Donkey of the Day after this rant that she came when she came for Beyonce. So he goes on the show. He explains the very simple truths. You know, he even invoked quotes of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and so forth, explain the injustices, what Black Lives Matter stands for, what the Black Panther Party stood for, and so forth. This isn't his first time interacting with this woman. For whatever reason, he decided that he was going to invite her to the Breakfast Club, which she declined, but they did a photo op. And he posted those pictures on Instagram, and he was asked, like, why are you even bothering with this racist woman? And he said, because I believe that there's still hope. I believe that, you know, we can change what she thinks. Now, I come from a psychology background. I can tell you that you cannot simply have a conversation with someone and change what they think. It's just not going to happen. But how honorable of you, Charlemagne the God, to
it's
take the
honorable.
Time.
Stop it.
You heard me.
Stop.
You heard my tone. But I would like to say that this is someone who is from Charleston, South Carolina. And when interviewed on The Root Live last year, he said, quote, "You know what's so crazy? I have never confronted racism head on, and I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. I worked in Columbia for 7 years where the Confederate flag flew on the state house's lawn. I've never had a white person call me the N-word. I personally have never felt that I didn't get something because of the color of my skin," end quote. Right? So I'm from the South, and I know exactly where he's coming from on this. You experience racism in very different ways in the South. People think that you just walk down the street and someone's going to shout the N-word and someone's going to, like, you know, show you a rope. That's not how it works. You can very peacefully live in the South. Right. Mm-hmm. In most cases, you can live in the South and not be confronted with the racism that people have imagined there to be because of the civil rights movement. There are no water hoses and dogs coming for you. Anyway, so obviously there was a huge... huge backlash. And on the Breakfast Club Twitter feed, Charlemagne the God said that he was the donkey of the day for his remarks, which is correct. He was definitely the donkey of the day. People like Francesca Ramsey were tweeting at him.
Mm-hmm.
Francesca Ramsey and Crystals both have MTV shows. He has an MTV show, yet he neglected
somehow them. He didn't even know. Like, he just... That invisibility, like, all he sees is Tommy, right? And she ain't even on network cable. She's not on that.
She's on the internet.
She has the internet.
She's on the internet.
And all he sees is Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's this hyper visibility of a white lady. And it's the same kind of centrality of whiteness that Lee is doing, right? Like, the only one that could save us is this white person, right? Like, this is the only.
But
like,
he didn't say that. He said that we need to see her as the example and make great things. I would like to say that I did tweet to Charlamagne the God. I was like, we have been doing woke podcasts for a year now. Here's our Patreon site. Mm-hmm. You can go fund us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure he won't. I'm sure he won't. Because he's a mess. I mean, come on, Charlamagne the God. I mean, this is who he is. Look at how he did that Young Ma interview. Look at who he, I mean, like.
I felt like just... DJ Envy was worse in that interview, to be honest. I felt like he was much worse. I think okay. Charlamagne was chill in comparison. He made that one little joke about, oh, you met Lee Daniels at Pride. But trying to get into her sex and her mm-hmm. body, that was more DJ Envy that time.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. This willful blinders means that he doesn't really even understand what racism is, right? How you are from South Carolina and you say, I don't deal with, or I've never personally, like, racism is not necessarily a personal thing. It can be in cases where someone is behaving racist towards you. Sure. But racism is a systematic thing. And you cannot tell me this systematically in South Carolina. Come on, really?
Well, that was the odd thing. He said in this interview, he said, I understand systemic racism, mm-hmm. but I personally have never experienced racism on my body. That's what he was saying.
But what's that got to do with anything?
That's the
you understand?
Point.
That's
yeah,
like
exactly.
If you got a boy that had been out raping everybody and you say, well, he had never raped me.
Right.
Like, what does that have to do with anything? There's too many people in the world. You can't rape everybody. It's not enough time in a day. What does that have to do with anything? Right? Like, it's just, I can't with these dudes. I just can't. I can't. I just, I, so much can't. Like, I can't. That's who he is. I'm glad that he gave himself the donkey of the day and he's willing to learn and he's willing to grow.
Someone else had already given it to him. Just
right.
By the way, old girl Yesha Cleland from The Root, on the day that he tweeted his nonsense, on that day,
uh-huh.
she had the opinion out quick sure. with the article. You were the donkey of the day,
right? And this and I'm so with very strong, very smart brothers when they said, you know, we need to stop letting ourselves be seduced by shitty white women, and I know for a fact. That if Tommy looked like Rosie O'Donnell, that nobody would be falling over themselves to try and find her good heart underneath all that peroxide. Nobody. Like, it's a lot of this is aesthetic. A lot of this is, oh, this pretty young little white woman, she can't be all that bad.
Right.
It's meanwhile,
not even so much her face. It's like she fits that picture, right? She's small and petite.
Mm-hmm.
She must be protected.
Mm-hmm. I don't really think that Black men have fully understood how invested they are in white comfort, especially white female comfort, and how they're programmed to be absolutely invested in that. I mean, in one of the conversations I had with another Black woman on her page, she was very upset about Charlamagne, Trevor, you know, protecting and caping for Tommy. And the two Black men that responded in the comment were also caping for Tommy. She's just like, I think it's really telling that, you know, the two first Black men that responded here are also caping. And I said, you know, I wonder if the myth of Black savagery, the myth of the angry Black male rapist, right? This myth of the Mandingo is so internalized that, especially in the context of dealing with a white woman, that Black men are actually afraid, programmed against their own justified angry responses to stuff or to dealing with a situation with the racist aggression of a white woman in an appropriate way, that they kind of have to tap dance around that because lest they be construed as, you know, this angry fella. I mean, look at how gentle, well-spoken, handsome, well-raised, and peaceful Colin Kaepernick is. And he still, right, from a Tommy, he still gets labeled as this, like, you know,
right.
crazy convict, felonous, you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And that's what I'd like to point out in my Next, and the third man that I'm coming for today, his name is Trevor Noah. Now, we spoke very briefly about the interview that he did with Tommy Lauren last week. And in some ways, he got a lot of positive feedback on that interview because it was probably one of his best. And yet it was still very weak. In my personal opinion, that interview has been weakened because of this essay that he wrote for the New York Times called Let's Not Be Divided. Divided people are easier to rule. This came out on Monday, December 5th. In it, this is my first issue. And it comes up often, and I might get some hate mail on it. It's possible. But there's something about being biracial or mixed race, depending on where you come from, or colored, depending on where you come from, you'll use a different word. There's something about being that outside of the U.S. that allows people to believe that they are something else. And in this essay, he said a lot of ignorant things. One of them being, quote, I grew up under the harsh racial oppression of apartheid as a person of mixed ethnicity. The lines between black and white were clearly drawn and enforced with guns and tanks. But because I am neither black nor white, I was forced to live between those lines. I was forced to communicate across those lines. I was forced to learn how to approach people and problems with nuance. If I hadn't, I wouldn't have survived. America, I found, doesn't like nuance. Either black people are criminals or cops or racists. Pick one. It's us versus them.
How about, since you're not black, shut the fuck up.
How about that?
Shut the fuck up. And he really needs to sit down with Cornel West, the highest of yellows, and talk about, you know, and say to Cornel West, I, Trevor Noah, many a shade darker than you, am not black, and just like get schooled on what blackness is, right? Like that's not, it's not a opt out. Like, no, I can't
Black nor white. And this is something that I hear people in London or in.
That's ridiculous. That means you don't even understand race. You don't even understand how whiteness is constructed. And exactly. Sure, it's imaginary.
Because race is contrived, right? But 400 years ago, when people were like, uh oh, these indentured servants are about to align with these slaves we're bringing in, we got to make this real clear. When that started the whole thing, right, that is what I would call the origins of white supremacy right there, and demarcating so that we don't have an uprising of these low-life people. Any notion of neither nor was gone. It's lost.
Let me tell you this. If you could inherit whiteness, right. If you can inherit whiteness genetically because you got a white parent, white grandparent, what? I don't know, maybe 50 to 75% of Black America would disappear. They just wouldn't be Black.
including me.
Beyonce, we gonna lose. Who else? Pharrell gone. Everybody gone.
The president is gone.
President gone, he ain't Black. Stop it, Trevor. You here now. And to be real, your Black ass is not getting cookies for a little bit of whiteness up in South Africa. Stop it.
Stop it. In South Africa, where there are places that you still cannot go if you were Black.
If you ain't white.
Exactly. If you are not white, you cannot visit certain parts of the country. But he claims that our two-party system has messed things up. Look, I'm not going to get in on South Africa politics right now. I'm not going to get in on Zuma. I'm not going to get in on the... I'm not going to do it. But there's a lot of ignorance in this essay. He also writes... Let me just read another quote, a very important quote, because he's trying to rewrite history in a way that white people do with Martin Luther King Jr. He writes, quote, to the extremists and true believers of any cause, there is an idea that moderation and compromise are simply a prelude to selling out and giving up, when in fact the opposite is true. Moderation brings radical ideas to the center to make them possible. Nelson Mandela never wavered in his demand for one man, one vote. Indeed, he endured 27 years in prison to make that notion a reality. But when our nation stood on the brink of civil war, Mr. Mandela spoke to white South Africans in a language that soothed their fears and reassured them that they would have a place in our new country. He spoke to militant Black nationalists in a way that calmed their tempers but did not diminish their pride. If Mr. Mandela's efforts had failed, South Africa's peaceful transition to democracy would never have come to pass, end quote.
Now, South Africa got democracy, though? Shut the fuck up, Trevor.
Look, I could take this part of the essay, I could take apart piece by piece.
Sure.
And use his, and show him how his language reflects white supremacy. So South African white folks, he just calls white South Africans, and they right. have to have their fears soothed. But the black nationalists, he calls militants.
Meanwhile, white people are sicking dogs on you and just sucking up resources that they got for free for being white, you know, aren't militant at all.
At all.
Like, they're just not.
Okay. They're invading other countries that have nothing to do with them.
They're invaders, dude. Like, they're one generation away from Britain. Like, what?
No. Even the apartheid invaded Angola. Like,
oh, it's such a mess. Trevor. It's such a mess. It's like, dude is, it's really interesting. I think that, you know, dudes coming from such blatant expressions of racism. South Carolina, where a cop who on video shot in the back a running black man
8 times
and then planted evidence.
Lied about it. Planted
and then lied about, like, there's so many ands on this, right?
And the jury is hung. They can't decide.
They can't convict. I just,
even,
you know,
after
mistrial.
Even after the judge said, if you can't go for the murder charge, consider the manslaughter charge. And they
right.
were still like, we're not sure though.
Right. We should just, I can't come to a, so there's that. So you're from such, like, you could be driving in your car and have a cop just straight up murder you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And guess what? That cop is going to go for coffee the next day mm-hmm. and probably for the rest of his life as a free man. And that's where you come from. Right. And then you got someone who's coming from South Africa. I remember, like, boycotting all kinds of products that were supporting apartheid. So this is my lifetime. Right. Like, in high school, I was doing this.
Right.
OK. So you know, you're so obsessed with your otherness. You know, I'm not like those other black people. I'm a special snowflake. Right. Like, I'm over here with my white daddy. Right. I was born a crime. Shut the fuck up, Trevor. Go somewhere with that. Because you know what? All of your, I'm trying to comfort white folks, it ain't working. They don't see him as the true host of that show. They don't think he deserves to host that show. Let's be real. Trevor has come on the stage and has been introduced to us as, on the backs of his own anti-blackness, some of his first material that went mainstream viral that a lot of people saw. He was like, why do you name your people Shanae? Why do you know, I mean, like, all of this anti-blackness that was specifically anti-black American. And then he came back and said, oh, well, you know, maybe that's regrettable because I should have read some books and whatever. And he still needs to, like, maybe you should do some work on the community that you're coming in. I could never go to South Africa and be like, okay, so what y'all need to do.
Right. And I think what's just so odd to me when it comes to people of many descent who always talk about the specificity of race politics in the U.S. Yes, there are some things that are very specific, but there are some things that people need to understand. The way race works in the entire world is rooted in how the slave trade was conducted in North and South America during 400 years of its purpose. And if people don't understand that, it is not specific to the states, that we do have a lot of nuance, and the black and white is a very universal concept that has its roots in the slave trade. If people can't even grasp that concept, if they have to work so hard to separate themselves from our blackness, if you will, then we're never going to get anywhere. That we're not going to be able to dismantle white supremacy.
Let's talk about the one drop rule just for a second, because I think that it needs to be spoken on in a sec, a lot. I'm in Austria. Many, if not most, of the black people I encounter are mixed race. Mm-hmm. They have a white parent. They have a black parent. That's, you know, wonderful. Good. And I have often encountered them saying something to the effect of, I'm neither white nor black. Encountering them saying, well, how black do I have to be? Or them saying the inverse of that, which is, I am white and black. Mm-hmm. And I always say to them, where are you white? Who considers you white?
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you really think that you could walk through the world as a white person? Many of them have white siblings, white parents, right? And I say, do you think you walk through the world like your white parent or your white sibling? Do you think the cops treat you like your white parent or white sibling? Do you think potential employers treat you like your white parent or white sibling. Now, colorism is a thing in a Black community, but we all Black.
But we're
that's
all
the
Black.
Thing is that, that's the thing is that you can't opt into whiteness. Whiteness is a gated community. There are groups that have sued to enter that gated community, but they have to at least pass the whiteness appearance test. Mixed race people, by and large, do not. There is no way that as soon as eyes lay on their body, that anyone would read most of them as white.
Right.
Okay. So this kind of idea that whiteness and race in general is a genetic inheritance. It is not a genetic inheritance.
Even Lionel Richie's daughter was talking about that just this week. You know, people make racist jokes around her, not realizing that she's Black.
She's a white passing Black person.
Right.
Yes.
She's always reminded of her Blackness, even in the moments where people don't realize she's Black.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's key. She's always reminded of her Blackness. In our second segment, Time, the magazine, names a person of the year every year. And what needs to be understood about that person of the year, it has nothing to do with greatness and has everything to do with who has been the source of creating a lot of news, right? So it's not about being a great person or conquering or what. It's about how much you're talked about over the course of a year. And that person has been Martin Luther King Jr. in 1963. It has been Adolf Hitler in 1938. Joseph Stalin even got it twice in 39 and in 42. President Obama got it in 2008 and 2012, the years that he was elected as president. And this year, Time named the president-elect, I do not utter his name in my house, the president-elect of the United States, person of the year. Obviously, everybody went into a frenzy that they would even have the gall to do so. But they say, hey, who has the world been talking about all of this year? And I have to say, there's some truth to it. Some of my most reliable podcasts for news, economics, and politics, this name just comes up all the time and has been coming up for months now. So if their metric is who's creating news, I guess there is some truth to it. But, you know, it's kind of like this thing where they just keep feeding it. It's not that he creates news. It's that they keep feeding it because they keep allowing him to create news, in my opinion. So don't want to talk about that. What I do want to talk about is who our picks are for person of the year.
Alicia Garza, that is my person of the year right now.
Tell me why.
Okay. This has been a paradigm shifting year for civil rights, human rights, and identity politics, as the white supremacists like to call it. And that is in large part because of Black Lives Matter. That's in large part because of the work of the main organizers and the team at Black Lives Matter to not just articulate Black struggle and be present for it, but also to connect it to larger issues that are moral as well as policy-based, right? And specifically not just I think that when any kind of human rights or any kind of movement gains traction, it's because it becomes a universal thing. What Black Lives Matter has been able to do is articulate how the struggle for Black human rights in the United States is a worldwide issue. It's not just specific to the United States. I will always be completely, completely grateful to Black Lives Matter because of that. Living in Europe, many times European like to locate racism in North America. They like to say, well, it's not over here. I've even heard Africans say that. It's not over here because, you know, we're all Black, you know. So they want white supremacy to live in the mind and the heart of Donald Trump. It's an American thing. It belongs to the Ku Klux Klan, and every place else is like a racial utopia. And the fact that Black Lives Matter was able to create a banner of rights that could be taken on by the very specific struggles of people in other countries is just like magnificent. I don't even think people have fully realized how powerful that is and why that's so important in this moment. I feel like that movement has turned in a way that, in a very real way, 2016 into a seminal civil rights year, into a year that will go down into the history books as like, wow, that's when the modern, or whatever they want to call it, the new, the third wave, the second wave, I don't know. Like, that's when it like really kicked off Power Keg moment, you know, because you had all of these like little things that never really got the level of traction. But then you have this, you have a place that people can always return to, and you have a rallying cry that is so clear and so simple and so undeniable, right? And just your people's denial, systems denial, government's denial of just the relevancy and the value of Black life at the center of it is so important. Alicia Garza, who is your pick for a time, person, or not even time, just our person?
Yeah, just our person. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had a feeling that you might go with Alicia and Patrice and Opal. Had a feeling, but I wasn't sure. I'm going with female activists as well. And I'm choosing the young female activists who are leading Standing Rock to victory. So unfortunately, I don't know as much about that movement as I'd like to, because media has been really limited. What I know about it is either people who have been there, and I've just kind of been following their Twitter feeds and their personal ramblings, and a bit of mainstream media, which of course is focused more on the elders. And please, by all means, give the elders their respect, as you do, especially in Indigenous cultures. But there are some young female activists like Lauren Howland and Jocelyn Charger who have fought hard at Standing Rock, North Dakota, which has been under attack due to the potential of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which would go under the river and potentially cause a great threat to the water supply there. Currently, they are celebrating a victory because the Army Engineer Corps decided that they would look for a different route, a better route. It's not being pursued. However, the builders are saying that they're going to continue to go for it. So we'll see how it turns out. But the attention that they were able to bring to this very important issue, how they were able to stand their ground, how they were able to bring more and more people to Standing Rock to support the cause. And not all of those people had the right intentions. I'm really clear on that. I'm not praising everyone who went, but I am praising like what these women were able to achieve. So there has been the idea to now move that energy that was so successful at Standing Rock, to take it to Flint, to actually see change there. However, someone did write a very long paper on why they don't think Flint will have the same success as Standing Rock. The other thing that I'd like to mention here is it's really frustrating because you brought up Black Lives Matter and now I'm talking about Standing Rock. I have seen a lot of white people post, you know, look what is possible when you, and then all caps, peacefully protest. Wow. Change is possible.
You will get hosed in sub-degree temperature. How about that?
Exactly. And you know, I like to stay out of comments because I believe in low blood pressure and a long life. But I got in those comments because I was like, there was nothing peaceful about what law enforcement did towards those protesters. So there have been a lot of people who've been really loud, and you know what they're doing when they do that. They're, again, pitting brown people against brown people. So they're saying, oh, the Standing Rock people did it right. And what's frustrating about that is, like I said, Standing Rock did have a lot of white protesters who joined and acted like they were basically at Burning Man. So it's frustrating to see white people be like, see, this is what's possible when you just do it peacefully. Black Lives Matter does not condone violence. It does not preach violence. It does not ask for violence. And nor did these people ask for people to come and do drugs and party on their sacred lands. So I just needed to say that because there's been a lot of ignorance online. But I'm excited about people like Lauren Howland and Jocelyn Charger. And I think it's amazing that we're in a time where young women who are at the front, their names are known and they're getting the attention that they aren't asking for, but in my opinion, that they deserve because of the work that they're putting in. In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? What happened? Let me hear it. You ain't got nothing. So I'm going to start because, yo, I'm really surprised. The new Childish Gambino. Pure dopeness. Pure dopeness. Like, it doesn't even sound like anything he's ever done before at all. It's like, it's like experimental, and there's like singing. There's not a whole lot of rapping. The music is different. It was like he was influenced by like Saul Williams, Martin Luther King, and like some old Andre 3000 and some who else? I don't know. I just hear a lot of different influences on the album. It's dope. I love it. The new John Legend. Not feeling that one so much. I am actually feeling the new album from The Weeknd, and like all of his tracks are in the Billboard 200 right now. So I guess I'm not the only one feeling it. So there's been like a lot of new music to come out. Drake has failed us. His whole album hasn't dropped yet. It's supposed to. J. Cole's album is about to drop. So I am very excited about all this new music that's coming out right now. And it's kept me from my holiday music. Normally, you know, I'm in my feelings. I'm already singing some Ella Fitzgerald, The Weather Outside, you know, but I'll get there. We have some more time. Right now I'm listening to Childish Gambino on repeat. And I've given you enough time now. Let me hear. What are you excited about? It's the little thing.
I'm excited to be done with 2016. How about that?
Wow, it's not over yet, though. You people, you need to read my newsletter from this week. The year is not over yet.
No, it's over. it's actually, yes. Okay, it's over for me. And I'm looking forward to 2017. How about that? This was a shit year. I'm sorry. Like, as much as there have been many little triumphs, it's just been so rough and so hard.
Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. Until next time, peace out.